0-1. Swing and a line drive to the gap, left center field. That's down for a base hit. It'll go all the way to the wall. Kirk is racing around the bases. He wants to score. Peralta to Franco. No relay. Kirk hits the plate, standing up. All the way around the merry-go-round for Alejandro Kirk. On an RBI double from Teoscar Hernandez, and it's 6-2 Toronto.
Everyone loved it, you know, and, you know, Louis Rivera is probably the, you know, most bold third base coach in the league doing that, but he actually smirked on the way in, and it's the most exciting play in sports when Kirky scores from first.
God, how do you not love Alejandro Kirk motoring around the bases, helping the Blue Jays with that evening comeback win? First part of the day didn't go as planned. Split the doubleheader, the Looney Dog doubleheader yesterday against the Rays. Blue Jays are now ahead of the wild card, AL wild card race by half a game. The shuffle continues. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Haley and Ailish. Happy Wednesday, folks. Full day of baseball. How did you celebrate the day?
I mean, I definitely, I scattered my nap as we planned yesterday. Lots of baseball. I feel for anyone actually broadcasting the game. I was just sitting on my couch watching, and that's, I was right, like, oh, I need a nap. I need a little break. I got to take a little rest before gearing up for the next one where I'm going to sit on my couch and do nothing. Really an extension of my Sunday activities where I sit on the couch and do nothing. So I celebrated with a really relaxing day, sitting on my couch and watching baseball. I didn't make hot dogs. I was at home.
Probably for the best.
I did end up watching a bit of the last game. One of my friends got a puppy. Very cute little.
I saw lots of photos of the puppy.
Yes. And the dog
snooze fest
was just, yeah, she was biting my hair for a significant amount of time. And then she just passed out for the rest of the baseball
game. I would say watching baseball with a fresh puppy is up there on the ways to watch baseball.
It was great. I really do recommend a little husky puppy, 10 weeks old.
Wow.
Really cute.
Cool.
Still training with the biting. Don't. But it was good.
You think she could run as fast as Kirk right now?
I have watched that clip so many times. It makes me smile. I mean, you watched me. We're sitting here. This is some of our inside baseball. We're getting ready for the show. And I'm just sitting here smiling at my computer at, you know, 5:45 in the morning. And it's watching Kirk run the bases. It was great. It just makes me happy.
John Schneider said, you know, it's one of the most exciting plays in baseball.
In sports.
In sports.
I agree.
We should do a power ranking of most exciting moments in sports. And that's got to be in the top 10.
I think so. Just based on the way that it brings me joy.
Another top 10 moment in sports is a Springer dinger. We got to see that in game two. Huge, huge for him to get back into the home run hitting George Springer that we all know and love. But yesterday, there's two games, lots to unpack. We sit here yesterday morning hyping up game one with Alek Manoah on the bump. Little did we know at 2 a.m. he was feeling quite sick enough to call the trainer and say, yeah, I'm not sure that I can start game one. So nothing invigorates Looney Dogs more than a last-minute change. You got Merriweather kicking off game one. I think people were a little bit shocked with the news that came out. And then you find out that Manoah is not able to pitch game one. Mitch White comes in right after, basically, and not the greatest of starts for Merriweather. Consecutive singles to open the game. Mitch White then comes in, and poor guy, I actually think he deserves a lot of credit. We can get into that after, but he's burned by a three spot and just feels like a tough hole to dig out of. Jays, once again, coming from behind. They weren't able to string together enough offense.
Nope.
But Mitch White really did kind of rise to the occasion. He was put in a really tough spot. I was reading that he got the call. Obviously, he's not prepping to be a start, like a, you know, basically an opener. And then he gets he was supposed to pitch in second game. He gets the call, though, yeah, you got to get here real quick. Like, probably change your routine, get out of your, you know, your your regular non-starting routine and get to the ballpark. Right. So that to go to come in to pitch as long as he did, six frames. Mm-hmm. Honestly, Mitch White, unsung hero of the day, because if you look at what happened the rest of the day, he really set the Blue Jays up to have an impactful bullpen moving forward.
For sure. Well, exactly. I think him going for six innings, as you said, it didn't force the Jays to have to use too many guys from the bullpen, mm-hmm. kind of save them from going that way. I was curious maybe why. I know Merriweather had the one run, couple hits. I was curious, though, like, why didn't he maybe go another inning? But maybe that was the Blue Jays kind of managing their pitchers, managing the bullpen with the question mark around game two still, being like, we want Mitch White to come in clean. Mm-hmm. We don't want him to come in and, you know, in the middle of an inning if Merriweather gets into trouble. We don't want to use too many arms.
Well, especially on a doubleheader, like you.
Right. And where so a doubleheader rare. Where you're not really sure if mm-hmm. Alek Manoah is going to be available for game two. So you're trying not to use too many arms. And I think Mitch White went in there and allowed the Blue Jays to kind of save some guys. And I think he gave them a chance. Obviously, again, it's not perfect pitching, but when you go from thinking you've got Alek Manoah starting game one mm-hmm. to essentially a bullpen day, can we call it that?
Yeah.
Kind of, pretty much a bullpen day. Mm-hmm. Bullpen game, I should say. And four runs in the first three innings, but they kind of locked it down after that and gave the Blue Jays a chance to get back into the game. The bats just weren't there.
We've had that conversation before.
This is a recording.
You know, Mitch White, that's his season high of six frames. Mm-hmm. I will say that Mitch White has had a bit of an up and down, let's say, month. He was demoted, if you remember, a week or so ago. Mm-hmm. He had 18 runs in 3 days. It was... Thumbs down, Mitch White.
Not good.
A lot of comparisons were drawn to how people feel when Kikuchi gets the mound. Then he's brought back as a 29th man for the doubleheader, and he was put in a really tough position. I think there's probably an extreme amount of pressure on him. Then there's the last-minute shuffling of the day. I will say, good on Mitch White. I don't think that we're going to be seeing more Mitch White because of that, but I just think he deserves some credit, a little mm-hmm. unsung hero. Without Absolutely. Knowing how that second game would go as well, if you knew that you had, you know, Gausman ready, that was no question in the evening, I think maybe things would have been managed differently. But as you mentioned, not knowing what's going on, that's kind of the main storylines from game one. Obviously, game two had a little bit more excitement.
Oh, wait. That final at-bat mm-hmm. in game one was awesome. Sorry
for the Blue Jays.
Yes. Bo Bichette.
Oh, I'm like, I don't remember. There's so much baseball yesterday.
What's happening? Yeah. Wait, what? No, the Bo at-bat, that was such a good challenge. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, I kind of left that game.
With being a little bit of confidence for the next one?
Oh, I was just like, all right, I'm going to go take my nap. I'm good. Like, that was just whatever. I was very prepared for it to just be, okay, bats were mm-hmm. gone. This was kind of a blah game. I don't want to mm-hmm. call it a full bust, but it was like, oh gosh, that wasn't good. And then for Bo to go in there, and it was what, 11 kind of pitch duel. Mm-hmm. It was great. I thought it was fun. I think that was kind of one of the moments where you're like, yeah, this made the baseball game fun. Like mm-hmm. one kind of at bat, one moment.
Especially late in the game, which shows that like you're not letting your foot off the gas pedal when you're down, and knowing that there's another game ahead, I wouldn't think that anyone in that position that's a pro would say, wow, this is less important. But
yeah,
Bo being the guy, that the competitor that he is, you're right. It instills confidence that he's still going to grind it out. It wasn't a successful you know, finish to the game, but
I just thought it kind of changed the vibe of the game mm-hmm. just because of, like, they were just locked in into a duel, him and the pitcher, and mm-hmm. He was fouling like 100-mile-per-hour mm-hmm. fastballs, sliders, whatever they were throwing at him. It was so impressive mm-hmm. to watch, and it just made it exciting for that. I felt like he was at the plate for like 10 minutes.
feel like the fans the fans at the Rogers Center needed something that yeah. game. I will say I was extremely disappointed with the Looney Dogs showing in game one.
Yeah.
Only 21,000. What are we doing, folks? I hyped you up. I said Toronto has been putting in the work and stretching out the stomachs. Just 21,000. And it's not that there was, you know, there were less attendees there, but the dogs per person, that stat
that was
rate down.
Was not
dogs
good.
Per fan down yesterday.
Hot dogs per 60.
The hot dog Corsi.
Yeah. Expected
we need a
dogs.
Heat map of
the expected dog rate.
It there's only 24,000 people that attended game one, but 21,000 hot dogs were sold, and that's a 0.9 dogs per fan. The lowest dogs per fan all season long.
Wow.
So the Blue Jays had
everyone
to
just
face,
saving themselves for the night.
Well, I don't think the nighttime was a success as we had hoped. The stats aren't out yet, Haley, but I get the inkling that we did not hit the over 75,000.
Yeah, I should have stuck with 8,000.
Yeah, you would have been closer.
Yeah.
Very sad. Wins over Looney Dog consumption. I love it. So, you know, the fans, the Blue Jays all had to bounce back for game two. Looney Dog's numbers, Blue Jays numbers. Game two comes around. Manoah, he is on the bump. Looking, not you know, I wouldn't say that he looks the most healthy. He
Manoah flu game.
The Manoah flu game. The grit of this city, the grind of Manoah once again evident on the mound. He's got to be, in my books, one of the most exciting competitors in the game, in the sport. You know, in Toronto, what a face to have.
Mm-hmm.
He was up till 2, 3 a.m., sick.
Yeah.
He doesn't come to... you know, the ballpark as early as he would have. Obviously, they had like an IV Gatorade, you know, similar to the mornings waking up after college events.
Yeah.
Put the Gatorade, the Pedialyte in the body.
Yeah. The Pedialyte.
Been there. But yeah, Manoah being just absolute with his performance, mm-hmm. with his energy, with the way that he put that team on his back and found a way to go through. And give them an opportunity to win the game. Like, that's...
he meets the moment, right?
100%.
Consistently, he does. And that's what you want from a guy in such an important position. This has been the interesting part for me, kind of watching the Jays in a different way for the show, where you kind of have your notes and you have these things like, well, I'm going to talk about this. And then things change so quickly. There was a point, it was... like sixth inning.
Mm-hmm.
It's like these guys need to do something for Alek Manoah right now. Like step up to the plate and do something because this guy, he's sitting in the dugout with a towel on his head. He looks rough. He is like, he pitched well. He clearly didn't have his best stuff. Understandably so. Really gutsy kind of start for Alek Manoah. And the bats were quiet again, just like game one. I was like, all right, we can't let this get to like bottom of the ninth and you got one run and this guy just had a flu game for you. You got to do something. And then they did.
They sure did. It did feel like the script was kind of written again, like game one.
Yeah, no notes. Throw my notes.
you have no doubt. And I think even with the way that Manoah had to face adversity, that this storyline and this season that he's in his sophomore year is going to be, you know, iconic in many ways. I know yesterday was one of the first times I listened to the broadcast and the post game with Blair Barker. It was one of the first times that I was starting to hear Cy Young conversations. And in the game, they showed a board, Sportsnet showed a board of Robbie Ray's stats, who won Cy Young last year, and where Alek Manoah is in terms of his season so far. And the numbers are eerily close. And I know there's a lot of good pitching this season, and defense or offense is down. So it's an interesting type of comparison. But I will just say that yesterday, with everything that Manoah went through and everything he has done and the consistency, the numbers are showing that he should at least be in that conversation.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a couple guests on today that can give some analysis of that. Mm-hmm. You know, Caleb Joseph, who was on the call last night, Julia Cruz, who is MLB.com contributor, and she was at the game and wrote about the Jays. I just saw that she put up her story at 1:30 a.m. So
grind.
Good for her. Mm-hmm. The grind. I don't think it's out of question now that is something that we should be on Cy Young watch.
For sure. I don't know if I'm at a point where I'm saying Alek Manoah is the Cy Young favorite, but at the very least, he is in that conversation. He's in that kind of consideration mm-hmm. based on his body of work this season. And I think, yeah, yesterday's game was a great example of that. This is a guy who doesn't have his best because he's very sick, and he still gives the Jays really good, six and third
mm-hmm.
innings. Really solid. You could tell he was really frustrated after he gave up the 2-1 run before. Was that in the seventh inning? Sixth? Before mm-hmm. he left the game. Clearly not happy with what he did there. But he still, again, I feel like I keep saying this about the pitching, is he gave the Blue Jays a chance to be in the game and win the game, which they ultimately did after some really great, kind of aggressive bench usage. Really impressive. Like mm-hmm. I feel like if you're a fan, and I know there was so much frustration at the beginning of the season, obviously there was a change with the managers on this team. I don't know how you can kind of watch that game last night and what Schneider pulled out mm-hmm. in the seventh and not appreciate what he's giving you and not kind of believe in, like, okay, finally. It was kind of like a exhale, finally the bench is doing something, you're getting something that's not Bo Bichette. We talked about this yesterday. It's the glass half full of, imagine when the Jays are going to finally start getting guys like Springer and Vladdy doing something, how good they're going to be. Or there's the glass half empty of, it cannot keep just, it can't just be unbelievable every single mm-hmm. day. You need other guys to step up to the plate, literally, and do something and have big moments and big games. And I mean, Merrifield steps up
biggest
and has that
since
big moment.
Acquired.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the huge, big moment in a big game. This is a high stakes series. And he steps up and kind of starts the nice little bench moment that we had.
Side note about Merrifield's double or important at bat. I don't know if you saw this on Twitter. The screenshot of him at the plate when this happens, in the background is a advertisement for Moderna.
Oh.
And he had all the vaccine questions when he got traded to the Toronto Blue Jays. And I just laughed so hard that someone put up a screenshot and said, poetic.
Ooh.
Not part of the narrative at all, but I just thought that a funny tidbit. But yes, what John Schneider has been able to do and the trust that he has in his team and that they have in him is certainly evident from that bench contribution, the way that he switched things up. You know, Espinal came in for Biggio, started mm-hmm. the rally with that four-pitch walk, and then after a Matt Chapman strikeout, you know, you have Danny Jansen coming in for Tapia. Merrifield steps in for Jackie Bradley Jr.
Yep.
You know, a run of three lefties and four batters had some, it exposed some vulnerability for the Rays. And mm-hmm. that's what you do when it's September baseball, when it's October baseball. You know, maybe that's not something that we saw. I know John Schneider hasn't been the manager this whole season, but that's, I don't know if that's something you're seeing in May, and that's fine.
Right.
Like, this is the time to make those decisions, to trust your players, to trust your instinct as a manager.
Yeah.
And on the broadcast, when this happened, he said, he's pressing all the right buttons.
Absolutely.
And it's working. And that's so evident with yesterday's game. And I think maybe there deserves to be a little bit more credit on John Schneider coming in mm-hmm. midway through the season and tweaking and feeling confident. You know, he's been able to, he switches the batting order up.
Mm-hmm.
He's put Bo Bichette in really uncomfortable positions. And look at how he's been able to excel from that. I think the next question, and we can ask both of our guests today, is it time to do something like that with Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? not part of, you know, yesterday's switch ups, but getting him going is extremely important.
Well, I think Schneider's kind of been setting up ways for his team to just have a chance and setting guys up for success. And it sounds like such a basic level thing, but that's exactly what you want from a manager. Like, that is how you have success, is when you are putting your team in chances to be able to have that kind of success and to capitalize on opportunities. They had that opportunity to go again, like, you know, with the lefties, and they're being patient, knowing that they had really good options on the bench later in the game with kind of how the Rays bullpen was set up. And I think, again, just knowing that and waiting and having that card in your pocket and then being able to execute well, obviously it worked out for the Blue Jays in this game. So I think that's a kudos to John Schneider, but also for the guys coming off the bench and stepping up in that moment. Could have went up to the plate and just completely swing and miss.
And they had done that in the past.
Absolutely.
And I don't think you would have felt like the level of confidence that you want with the bottom of the order. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that, and Whit Merrifield says this post game as well, that is a moment that he has wanted, that he has tried to have happen. Mm-hmm. And now that you get that level of confidence, and all three players that we mentioned that came in and came up clutch, that only really bodes well for these players to have that game. That won the game. Like, yep. You won the game against a huge rival that you are neck and neck with in the wild card standings in a series where you're probably going to need to win the next two, I would hope. Mm-hmm. You know, you're starting off today and tomorrow with some good pitching matchups now. The Rays are putting some of the bigger pitchers on the mound. The Blue Jays have the opportunity to continue to grow on last night's game. And for your bench players to feel that contribution, I was listening to Barker post-game, and he's played. He goes, you know what? Like, you sometimes need these guys to get that level of confidence. You need them to step in and feel like they're a contributing member of this team. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, like, intangibles that go on, and these players are – I've been a bench player. You know, like, sometimes you need – a little bit of boost to feel like you're a part of where this team is going.
Right.
And they did that last night. And John Schneider had some positive words about Whit Merrifield taking on a new role. And there's a lot of good clips post game from John Schneider, but we'll play this one. And, you know, you can tell that there's a lot of pride.
He's a total pro. He's had unbelievable success in this game. And he has taken on a kind of a new role, like an absolute professional. So he was ready. You know, we talked about it before the game. There's going to be a chance for you to get in at some point. Prepared well, went out and executed, and couldn't be happier for him.
Hell yeah. You know, there was a lot of support going around team-wide, and I think that that's important. The last couple games, it's been bow, bow, bow. Mm-hmm. And there hasn't been a lot of things to circle of, like, oh, well, this player also, you know, he was a massive contributor. There's been like one or two.
Right.
But yesterday, having everything from Mitch White coming in, from the bench stepping up, George Springer Dinger, Manoah being lights out, you got a Romano eighth inning step in, and then with the game out, you know, in hand, they decide to put him back on the bench and save him for tomorrow, or now today, and Thursday. Those decisions, the way that John Schneider has been in his bag making decisions, the way that this team has elevated as a team.
Right.
And not just relying on Bo for the last couple of days. Like, today, yesterday was, I feel like, a really great step as a team. And that's what you need with the next two games and Baltimore on the weekend, is everybody feeling like they contributed.
Teams need to find ways to win differently, right? It can't just be Bo Bichette every night. It can't just be blowouts every night. It can't just be 2-1 games every night. And I think the Blue Jays showed that they can find ways to win differently. If it's a big Bo game, if it's their bench. I think we've looked at some of the players over this week on who need to step up. I mean, Kirk had a difficult game the other night.
Kirky.
So great. Just makes me smile. And he comes in and he scores from first in that great moment. So I think this was a really good example of Alek Manoah stepping up to the moment and the Blue Jays finding a way to win. I'm curious how you feel about this series, obviously five games, high-stakes series against Rays, for it to be a success, it kind of needs to be, they need to win 4 or 5. It needs to be 4-1, right? Mm-hmm. And that's going to be difficult because of the way that the Rays have kind of scheduled their starting pitchers.
Drew Rasmussen tonight.
And the Jays have, you know, two of the better starters that they're up against in these last two. But I just feel like for this to really be a success, they've got to go 4-1, and that might sound like a really obvious thing, but it's so tight. You read the standings earlier in the show, and Mariners lost to the Padres, so the Jays are atop the wild card standings. Mm-hmm. But Seattle and Tampa, they're only half game behind. It is so tight right now that the focus, and again, it sounds so obvious, but the Blue Jays just need to try to win as many games as possible here. It's the cliche. The playoffs, their destiny is in their own hands.
The playoffs don't just start in October, and I think it's easy to be like, okay, they're going to make the playoffs. Well, they're going to make the playoffs, but what happens then in at least this week, tonight, tomorrow, and this weekend can really solidify them getting that home field advantage.
You do not want to go into Seattle.
You certainly
you do
not
want to be on the road in Seattle in the first round of the playoffs. So
how I feel
go
about...
Go win some baseball games.
Yeah. The next... two nights. You got Ross Stripling tonight, and you got Kevin Gausman tomorrow. Thursday, 3 p.m. So it's a little getaway game on Thursday.
Yeah.
But Ross Stripling has been, you know, one of those utility guys that has been an unsung hero, maybe now properly sung throughout the last couple months. I feel like if he goes in and gives what we expect from Ross Stripling and the bats can provide something, then this can be a very winnable game once again. The one thing I will say is the Blue Jays need to find a way to get at the starters. They've been starting these last two games and more recently behind.
Yeah.
Another comeback win, which is great. Like I really enjoy seeing a team that can have a comeback win, but it needs to be a little bit more confidence and production against the starters. So how do you do that? Is it a type of preparation? That's a big question. It's like, why are the Blue Jays not able to get at starters lately? It's really difficult for the starting pitching for the Blue Jays to feel like they're behind. Like you're down 3-0, you're down 4-0. You know, the Blue Jays aren't able to capitalize on your starting pitcher, and you're waiting till later in the game, the 7th, the 8th inning, to have these miraculous comebacks. Fun for fans. Mm-hmm. Probably not fun for the pitcher who's grinding it out, like Alek Manoah yesterday.
Trying to minimize the damage to give your team a chance, right? I agree.
100%.
You've got to stop playing from behind. You've got to start to find ways to get going early. So I don't know if it's just, I mean, the Rays are a good team. We've got to respect the opponent and what they bring on the mound. I think there's no question that the Jays are having some issues against their rotation and their bullpen. And that's, you know, we talked yesterday with our guests about this too. That's a really deep organization when it comes to pitching. And you can see that, and you can see that it's an issue for the Blue Jays. So they've got to just find a way to get at their starters and get going early.
Before we move on, I got one more thing about Alek Manoah. So I just pulled up the AL Cy Young favorites. Obviously, Dylan Cease and Justin Verlander have been kind of neck and neck. They're basically right now coin toss to win. Shane McClanahan, Tampa, plus 3,000. Shohei, plus 6,000. And Alek Manoah, so fifth or fourth, if you're putting the other two, tied, plus 1,300 for Cy Young. I mean, he's obviously seems far away from locking in even a top three, but there's still a lot of important games ahead, and if he had missed yesterday's start, which was a complete potential, it would have been really, really detrimental to not only the Blue Jays' plans for the day, but like the next coming weeks. He's got a spot in the rotation against Baltimore this weekend, the Rays next week, the Yankees back at home, and the Orioles at Camden Yards at the final series of the season. And the way they've set this up, and I know the bullpen day on Sunday has helped with that, is Manoah has some massive opportunities in the next couple weeks to continue this run of excellence. And that was really important for him to play yesterday. And I know you had a quote of him being like, I don't need to be.
Yeah, he's like, it's not really about how, it's not about feeling good. It's about showing up for the team or something. I was just like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, man, if I'm not feeling, yeah, my job is not to feel good. My job is to go out there and compete.
Hell yeah.
Like, I mean, when I'm not feeling good, I don't, I'm not going out and competing. I'm laying down.
Yeah.
But
Manoah,
I'm not a starting pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Certainly not. You're starting pitcher for the day on the Fan Morning Show, and for the rest of the day, we're like the starting pitchers for the day.
Yeah. And I showed up.
You did?
I'm a little tired.
A little tired. You're grinding out 3 days of this. I'm very impressed with your persistence and your energy.
Thank you.
Yesterday, another
live for the big moment.
Another Toronto team making some announcements. The Leafs announced their 27-man roster, which is going to Detroit for that prospect tournament, which is kind of the exciting kickstart of the season. I know it's not usually the most covered event or the most attended event, but it's just over the border. I think I looked, tickets are $10. So maybe if you're
the
in
Traverse City tournament, actually kind of rocks.
Yeah. Oh, have you been?
I've never been, but there's always a group of writers from the Athletic that go. And it's usually, you know, like Max Boltman, who covers the Red Wings. Like, that is his, this is Max Boltman's Stanley Cup, you know, because they have so many. Like, if you have a deep prospect pipeline, Traverse City rules.
And I will say,
Leafs, it'll be.
Yeah, it's
fun.
It seems like they are putting together a pretty powerful roster, like quite a lot of players with experience, some players on the older end of the range of acceptable prospect titling.
Right.
They're going to play Dallas, St. Louis, Columbus, and Detroit starting tomorrow. And the headliners, Nick Robertson. So this is going to be his third year doing the prospect tournament. And I think we can all agree that Nick Robertson needs to make this tournament his coming out party once again. Because I think he will be competing for a roster spot. I hope he's competing for a roster spot this year with the Toronto Maple Leafs. He played 10 games last year with Toronto. He's played a little bit more, but he's really struggled with some bad luck, you know, like injury-wise, shortened seasons because of COVID. I think he's been someone that we have wanted more from in this organization. It's been 3 years since he was drafted from the Petes. I feel like he's kind of been stuck in this spot of what is Nick Robertson. He's got, he's going to be probably one of the best, like last year he was already one of the best players at this tournament. He's shown that he has what it takes to be an NHL level caliber player. This is time once again to really, to stand out. Like I really certainly think that there's going to be some spots up for grabs and maybe that fourth line or bottom six for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's going to be tight. You know, they lost Mikheyev and Kasha. What's going to happen with Kerfoot? And so there are some holes to fill and some cheap holes to fill.
Right.
The Leafs don't have a lot of money to go out and find a guy that is a little bit better than Nick Robertson. So this is a very, very important weekend for what Nick Robertson should do. I think he'll be the main conversation point at the Maple Leafs prospect tournament.
I think so. And I think for Robertson, you've got to go into this tournament and just start building your confidence before main camp. I do think that it's always tricky with a prospect like Robertson. He's only 21. Like, he's still young. He's got so much growing and development left to do. Like, you don't want to rush guys like this. And you also have to kind of measure where are the open spots in our lineup and where is this player projected to be the most impactful. Like, if we believe that Nick Robertson is a top six winger in the NHL, I mean, is there a spot for that kind of thing? Like, is he going to go into camp and beat out somebody on the top six for the Toronto Maple Leafs right now? And that's way easier said than done when you're looking at the Leafs on paper. He will be in a competition with some of the depth players, but Nick Robertson hasn't exactly shown the ability to play the kind of role that the Leafs need in terms of depth, in terms of being reliable in all three zones, being good defensively. You can't put somebody on your third line checking line who might not be reliable in the defensive zone, who might not be able to check in the way that you exactly want. So I feel like there is that kind of gray area for Nick Robertson, and I think it'll be really important to see what kind of growth he's had over the summer you know, I'm sure he got a list of things to work on in exit meetings last season. And again, he's only 21. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. There's no use in rushing a prospect like this. But at the same time, you want
patience, though, because he doesn't seem like a young, there's younger prospects coming in that have jumped him in terms of where they're ranking. Like,
I don't. Like who's ahead of Nick Roberts?
Matthew Nyes.
He's not going to be at this camp because he's at school. That. But I know he. But that's. I understand wanting your prospects to be ready. But like the Leafs aren't in a rebuild right now. This isn't like, okay, come on. Why are we playing William Nylander over Nick Robertson? Like, get the kids in. This isn't Detroit. This isn't, you know, I covered the Ottawa Senators for a couple years and there was always that. Why aren't we getting our young players reps? Mm-hmm. Why isn't Drake Batherson or Shane Pinto or whoever in the lineup right now? Well, they don't need to be. Marinate them. You mm-hmm. want to see them dominate and show that they have nothing left to prove at the level that they're at. And I don't know. I've always been more of the like pump the brakes on the prospect. Like they're fine. He's 21 years old.
And I would totally agree with that. If the Toronto Maple Leafs weren't so reliant on some of their cheaper, younger players, I think this season with them being up against the cap, mm-hmm. I think a lot of the fan base probably wants Nick Robertson to be able to make an impact. Yeah.
You want guys on ELC doing something. Exactly. That's always really important when you're looking at Stanley Cup contenders mm-hmm. and teams that are winning the Stanley Cup. It's always teams that have guys contributing on their ELC or they have guys kind of outkicking their value, outkicking mm-hmm. their coverage, so to speak.
And there's a lot of players that are going to be at this tournament, not just Nick Robertson, that have an opportunity to not make the team out of camp.
Yeah.
But
just show something.
To be someone that is a viable option.
Mm-hmm. Abruzzese is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah. Abruzzese, you know, he
signed in the summer. It's his first camp.
Exactly. He's a guy that has been in that conversation. Alex Steeves, I think, is poised to make a really big jump. He was kind of in the conversation with Ty Voigt, and now he's taken some steps. And then there's the new guy that I was so pumped about, Fraser Minton, who was drafted this year by the Toronto Maple Leafs. We're going to see him in his first opportunity. And I actually got to talk to Shane Wright about 2 weeks ago post World Juniors. Mm-hmm. And he was so high on Fraser Minton. He's like, the Toronto Maple Leafs have maybe the steal of the draft with him.
Oh.
And I was Shane Wright saying that. And I know they're like, they've played together. He was really, really high on Fraser Minton. And so there's a lot of faces that are going to be making this as important of a tournament as possible. And yeah, there's not the main guys that the Toronto Maple Leafs have showcased as their top drafts. You know, Matthew Nyes, Hirvonen and Niemelä won't be attending, which is fine because we saw a lot of them at the World Juniors and we kind of know what to expect from them this season. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they're a little bit later in the year call-ups. But there's a lot of people with something to prove. There's 5 undrafted signees, 5 players on AHL contracts, 11 draft picks, 6 amateur tryouts. Like this tournament is, I think, underrated in terms of what it means to some of the players to mm-hmm. get out there to make a name for themselves. There's some familiar faces in the Toronto Maple Leafs organization that will be back on the ice. And honestly, you haven't, I don't know what they've been doing this postseason. It's exciting to see who made the biggest leap. So that's starting tomorrow. I'm sure there'll be some clips of, oh my God, Nick Robertson took, you know, 65 steps forward. And I hope so.
Yeah.
I really hope so because I think there's a lot of roster spots on that fourth line even available. Some names that, I don't know, is Kyle Clifford, Wayne Simmonds, are they locks for that? You know, they got Abe Kubel, they got Gaudette, Malgin, Joey Anderson. There's some
Aston Reese on a PTO.
Exactly. There's some competition, and that's what you want, a little bit of healthy competition at the bottom of that roster because the Leafs don't have a lot of money to go out and grab a
I think the Leafs have been
fourth liner.
Right. They've been really good at in recent years in like dipping into that bargain bin and finding guys
who are from Toronto and 35 years old. really good at that.
I mean, Michael Bunting was a bargain bin.
That's true.
Like they're really good at going and finding areas of, like, you've got, when you're tight to the cap, you've got a fish in the bargain bin, but you've also got to go and find guys that you think, okay, you know what, the stat line wasn't there or they're hurt, but there's potential here. And that's a credit to scouting and finding those. Michael Bunting was cheap. They went and found him and he slots in on the first line, has a great season. So I think the Leafs have been pretty good at finding guys like that. But you know what? With every hit, there is that 35-year-old from Toronto that you're like, could do without that.
Well, now Jason Spezza moving into that, you know, management leadership role with what he's doing. There's question marks around some of the other veterans, what they're going to decide to do, how much impact they can make this season with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I think there'll be some healthy competition with the youngins headed to Detroit tomorrow.
And I think my final thought on Robertson is I think what you want from him, again, build that confidence, show what you can do, go into camp and, I don't know, try to win a spot on that second line. I mean, who knows what the Leafs are going to be doing with their lines, because Sheldon Keefe was mixing and matching quite a bit, you know, when it came to John Tavares and William Nylander. And he's got some more depth forwards. Callie Yarncroke is in this year, Alexander Kerfoot. You've got some depth centers, guys with the versatility to switch from the wing to the center. But if you're looking at Nick Robertson and you want him to have meaningful progress and you want him on this roster, like I think he has to be on that second line left wing. I just don't see him being a depth player.
I will say, and I think that's what he's projected and that's what fans want. I'm curious to see when preseason begins, what is the makeup of that bottom six? Is there going to be that third line checking defensive line, which was really impactful, with a fourth line of like energy, offense, and youth? Yeah. Or do they mix that up a bit? I thought it was successful at times to have this shutdown line that was like one of the best shutdown lines in hockey that would go out against the studs and really be able to be
locked down, to stop. And transition into, like, be quick enough to transition from defense to offense. Obviously, coming
from
the Flames.
They lost some of those players, so.
They added a guy like Callie Yarncroke. He only scored one goal with the Flames. And he's a little...
Yeah, you would know him.
He didn't do a lot on offense. I think he struggled to get his footing in Calgary after being traded from Seattle at the deadline. I will say I never saw this guy. Like, I rarely saw this guy lose a puck battle.
That's
he
good.
Is so good along the walls. He works hard. He skates hard. He showed offensive upside in Nashville. Like, he was a really good player for the Predators. Like, I think there was a Twitter thread going around for a while. Like, who is the most properly rated player in the league? Like, who is just good and average? And people were like, it's Callie Yarncroke. He's good for, I don't even, like 20 goals, 50 points. I don't have that in front of me. I do apologize if that was way off. But he's consistently hovering in and around the same kind of offensive production. Really reliable in the defensive zone. Really good in the neutral zone. He can PK. He can take faceoffs in the D zone. Like, this is a guy that you kind of put in that middle, not middle six, I'd say bottom six role. He can play either wing. He can play center. He did not look great in Calgary.
You want a utility player, but
he's a good utility man.
Bounce back.
Didn't look great in Calgary. But again, he wasn't scoring. But he was doing all the stuff along the wall. He's winning puck battles. He's picking guys. He's picking the puck off people. Solid player. I'll be very curious to see what he can do in a full season in Toronto.
Yep, and prospects, he won't be obviously there, but the
he won't be in Traverse City.
Right, but
he's 30.
the preseason begins next weekend, which, a doubleheader.
Training camp next week. I'm not ready.
I know. You got to get back in the grind. All right. So we're going to take a break. I actually have an A-list story that revolves around the Toronto Maple Leafs, of course. That's where the center of the universe is. That's next on the A-list with Haley and Ailish at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's Haley Salvian and myself. Follow Haley at Haley Salvian, national hockey writer for The Athletic. Filling in this week. Appreciate it. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Putting the grind in. Are you still Denmark jet lagged or are you feeling better?
No, feeling better.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we're good. Now I'm just tired.
You're preaching to the choir.
My body is not 6 hours ahead any longer. And I feel it. But we're good. We're grinding.
I love it. Here's the A-list.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
It was Looney Dogs yesterday, but I still love a good poutine story. Poutine would be one of my elite cheat meal type of things to indulge in. And this BC restaurant has made headlines with a specific type of meal that they are providing. This is in the 17 Mile House Pub. It's an English-style pub out in BC. It was purchased by a Montreal Canadiens fan, Ken Whitaker, 17 years ago. So it's been in business for a while. They have been selling, they have quite a few different types of poutine on their menu, including Habs poutine, which is $12.95. And it is called a Quebec classic, crispy fries and cheese curds smothered in gravy. Sounds good. I would certainly choose that.
Yeah, classic. Solid.
Underneath that menu item is something called Maple Leafs poutine. Now it is $67. $67. I think we all know why. 67 is a significant number in Toronto Maple Leafs history. And the description of this poutine, quote, in usual Leafs fashion, a cold, overpriced dish served with underperforming gravy, ice-cold fries, and a side of disappointment.
Ha, 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 ha. Classic.
Obviously, somebody took a photo of that, and it became a little bit of a viral moment.
I've just got to say, the Habs are higher over the cap than the Leafs are, so the whole overpricing isn't landing for me. Fire up cap-friendly,
yeah,
my guy. It's That's just, good. They have, their projected cap hit is $92.7 million this year. That is the Montreal Canadiens. That sounds a little pricey to me. So.
I like that you went straight to the money.
Yeah. You read that. I've got to pull this up.
That's a good spin. That's a good way to avoid the.
You know what? I'm not going to laugh at this joke. I'm going to pull up some financial
figures. You take a shot back at them.
I mean, I don't really. Just fire up the cap friendly.
I love it.
The projected cap hits.
This is also a meal-related A-list story. The Kentucky Wildcats went to Florida and beat the number 12 ranked Florida Gators last weekend. The team then, well, it was a pretty big upset. The team then went out for dinner and I didn't even know you could do this. Ordered an entire alligator.
What?
Ordered an entire alligator and ate the entire, like ate an alligator. I did not know that you could eat alligators / order them at a restaurant. And it is just
like entire.
I'm going to show you this photo. It's a massive alligator on a table and they have consumed the alligator.
I knew that was a thing.
Did you?
Because I've been to Florida before and I've gone to a place called Gators and I'm almost certain they have gator on the menu. I did not eat anything.
It's disgusting.
It's a wild place.
It is, honestly.
I don't know if I want to look at this right now.
I sent you the photo. It's
no.
Outrageous. Ew. It's awful.
Oh my God.
But I guess that that's the way you're continuing to rub it in Florida Gators' face that you upset them. I don't know. It's just, it's yucky.
I don't like it.
What are the weirdest things that you have eaten in your life? Text in 590-590.
I'd rather see someone eat bugs.
I have eaten bugs before.
I don't know if that's true. I think that's also upsetting.
No, like, I think it's kind of a delicacy when you go to Asia. Like, there's in Cambodia, I ate a bunch of weird things. But I would never eat an entire gator. Like, I looked at that and I thought, nope, never, immediately no.
I have nightmares about alligators.
Well, probably not the best for you to look at this photo, but
that's why I really wish you wouldn't have done this.
I'm so sorry, but I have to provide the content in the A-list. I would love for people to text in 590-590 with whatever the weirdest thing you've eaten is. Matt and Dundalk. Alligator's pretty tasty, chewy, but good.
Oh. I just think it's the presentation of the alligator.
If you put it in like a stir fry, perfect.
It's just they're pulling
it out like a roasted
sitting
pig.
There. He's sitting there.
Like, you know when you get a pig and it's got like the pig face still?
Yeah.
Like, this is what that looks
it's
like.
It's just upsetting to look at. Like, I think it's pretty savage and like it's kind of funny. And then I look at the picture and like its head's still there. I don't like it. I don't like it.
the still texture of the body. David from Pickering, I eat grasshopper on a stick while in the streets of Bangkok. David from Pickering, I've done the exact same thing. Maybe we were there at the same time. I know exactly what street you're on in Bangkok.
Ooh.
It's very fun.
Sounds like it.
Good for you. And then last one, Zach from Caledonia, kangaroo jerky in Australia. Oh, that's kind of sad.
Is that ethical?
I'm a little worried that there's going to be some people putting themselves on blast eating things that aren't acceptable. But you know what? $5.95. Now you don't have to put your name. You don't have to put yourself
just let us
out
know.
There, but let us know.
Yum, yum, yum.
Oh, no. Not yum, yum, yum.
Not yum, yum, yum to this alligator
you know
picture.
What?
I don't want to see
yuck.
It.
Yuck, yuck, yuck.
I'm going to have nightmares right. Again.
Let's let you regroup during the break. We're going to talk to Julia Cruz next. What a weird day in Blue Jays lore. But Alek Manoah continue to be Alek Manoah. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.